ear, bass on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up. It's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd Up.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, along with...
Eric Billingsley, greetings and salutations.
Isaac Wilson, the other co-host.
Yeah, we're all here. We're ready to go with another Nerd Up Podcast. Got a few things to talk about. Let me give you a little idea of what's going to be going on in the episode this time around. Later on in the episode, I'll be talking with author Mark Wilson from Scotland. He's written a book called Dedenborough. Or if for Americans, we say Dedenburg, probably. But anyway, basically, it's a zombie novel for the young adult audience. And basically, he takes the bubonic plague from the 1600s, and he takes that plague, and they sealed people up to, you know, prevent the plague from spreading. Well, 400 years later, they open up these sealed cities. They called them closes. That's actually a part of Scotland's mythos. They never really sealed up. The myth just said that they sealed up the cities, but apparently they never really did. But he'll explain that when we talk to him. When they opened it up, the bubonic plague had mutated, and now it's creating zombies. And so you've got your plague doctors, you've got your zombies, you've got this really creepy guy that collects trophies from his killings, and at the same time he worships a dead celebrity. So he's a creepy guy, I'm telling you.
Is it Michael Jackson?
No, he actually kind of gave me a hint. It's a football player. I guess that would be soccer.
Wait, about earlier, does that mean, would they say the Titanic hit an iceberg?
No. 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 Never mind. Anyway, we're going to talk about that with Mark Wilson later on in the podcast. Also, Isaac's got another loot crate to unbox. We'll be unboxing his latest loot crate. And the theme this time was Warriors, although I would say the theme actually was more Bravest Warriors. But, you know, hey, we'll talk about that during the loot crate unboxing. And, of course, Eric and I and Isaac will be just chatting about general things. We're going to talk about television shows. And I've got actually, I want to start it out with an audiobook review. You guys jump in if you want to have if you have anything to say about this. But I just got through listening to an audiobook. It's actually Audio Comics Company is the name of the publishers, and they've taken a lot of comic books and put them to audiobook form. And they've done it with some Honey West comic books. They did Titanium Rain, which was a graphic novel that was just near future, just a really cool comic book, and then they turned it into an audiobook. And the way they've done it, basically, you know, the best thing about comic books and graphic novels is the artwork. You know, you've got the great dialogue going on, the storyline, but it's just so cool to look at the artwork. Well, how do you turn that into audiobook without the artwork? They do it by taking sound effects and great casting, vocal casting, and just make these things just like you're in a theater with this going on in your head, and you're making up the pictures, and the sound effects they use are just so cool, really unreal. And the one I read recently, it's based on the comic book The Perhaponauts. That's the name of the team, or the comic book. I think it's actually published by Dark Horse Comics. And this one is the first episode in audiobook form. It's called The Monsters Among Us, or Chimera Want to Tell You Something. So it's written by Todd DeZago and Craig Rousseau, the comic book is. And you may recognize Todd DeZago's name from Sensational Spider-Man, Telos, Young Justice. Greg Rousseau, he wrote Impulse, Batman Beyond, actually. And then Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane. And so these guys, great comic book artists, or writers. And then this was actually adapted by Todd DeZago and Elaine Lee. They had to, you know, convert it into audio form. And it's a full cast performance published by Audio Comics Company. I mean, I'm a huge fan of comic books. Have been for over 40 years. And don't be saying anything about my age. But over 40 years I've been a comic book fan. And I know comic books, one of the big things about them, sure, is the artwork. But the But the dialogue inside, I got an old friend of mine that he used to teach, he used to be an English professor, and he would bring comic books in, and the class would always look at him funny, like, that's a comic book. What's that got to do with English, you know? And so he would point out that the writing in these comics have to be so good that, you know, to keep the people enthralled. Not only that, but younger people that read these, they learn more vocabulary. And he pointed this out. I mean, that's how powerful comic books can be. And anyway, as I've grown older, I kind of grown to where I actually have less time for comic books. And one of the things about this digital this audio comic book is that I can actually listen to this while taking a shower, while doing dishes, while driving to and from work. So it gives you more time for comic books. And these are really good comic books. Now, the Perhaponauts, they're a group of cryptozoological characters. It's an organization called Bedlam. The leader of the team is, his name's Big. He's actually a Sasquatch. And what they've done, this group Bedlam, they captured a Sasquatch. And they have this technology to try to improve his brain power. And they did so, and the guy has just become so phenomenally smart. He's smarter than, you know, Tony Stark, Reed Richards, and Peter Parker all put together. So he's the leader of the team, and he's a Sasquatch. Another member of the team is a guy named Chewy, and he's a Chupacabra. They tried the same thing with Chewy that they did with Bigfoot, but it didn't quite go so well. So he's not exactly smart, but at least he's usable as a team member fighting crime. They've also got a character called Molly. She's a ghost. A Mothman. His name's Carl. Now, Carl's not one of the brightest ones, but he's there to help out. And as you know, probably have heard the legends of Mothmen. Basically, they make their appearances just before disasters. So in this comic book series, the Mothman has basically time travel abilities. And so they use him a lot. So basically, the premise behind this comic book, this audio comic, is that they're recruiting a new team member. This is an introduction. Now, what they're doing is they're telling a story. The comic book series is out there. They're telling a story that's based on the comic book. It's like a branch off of another adventure. So the audio comics version is going to be, you know, other stories that could have been in comics. Maybe they'll incorporate them later in the comics. But so they're not retelling any stories. They're recruiting a new member. And so they tell him about a mission where they were trying to capture a chimera, a shape-shifting chimera. And as they progress through the story, it's a cool adventure listening to how a chupacabra, a Bigfoot, a ghost, and other characters interact and form this superhero team. And at first it seems, this is silly. But then after they get on with the adventure, you're like, this works. It really does. So anyway, towards the end of the book, it's only 51 minutes long. So it's worthwhile just to pop in and enjoy an hour's worth of really fun stuff. But towards the end of it, there's a little twist at the end that really grabs you. You're like, hey, that's kind of cool. So Perhaponauts is the name of it. It's Monsters Among Us, or Chimera, I Want to Tell You Something, the subtitle. And it's put out by the Audio Comics Company. You can get it on audiocomics.com, I believe is their website. You can also get it on Amazon and Audible. The storyline was so cool, the way the characters interacted, so cool that I'm going to be adding the comic books to my reading list if I can ever find the time to get back to comics. So, but I wanted to talk about that. That's also, by the way, if you want to read the full review of that, it's on my blog site, gilwilson.wordpress.com, and I've got the full review on there, including more information about how to get a copy of it. So I had to talk about that, guys. Now let's, all right, let's talk about some television. I know, Eric, this is your forte, because that's why I recruited here. I wouldn't say, well, maybe not forte, but definitely your time waster event.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
I've got limited time for TV shows, and I have very few that I watch. But I want to tell you guys, I've added a new one. Isaac, you don't want to listen to this because it's got adult content, so you don't need to listen, all right? I guess he's not listening anyway.
What?
I thought so. anyway, Eric and I were talking about this offline before, but I want to mention this, and we'll talk about it here. It's a new series put out by Starz. You know, the Starz, it's like one of those lesser premium channels. Usually you get it free with basic cable sometimes, but they do have mature content. And this one is called Black Sails, Pirates Without Johnny Depp. And it's really cool. It attracted me. Isaac and I, last movie we saw a trailer for it, and I thought, well, that looks cool. I have to check that out. I watched the first episode, and these guys, I mean, it's dirty, filthy pirates. I mean, these guys, the costuming, the makeup, everything they do in this is just so cool that these guys look all scarred and beat up, and even like cakes of dried blood still stuck to their heads and stuff. And the scenery, it actually takes place on Bermuda back in the 1700s. The scenery is just so cool. The ships and everything. They are actually building ships for this series. They're actually custom building ships for the full ships, not just, you know, stage ships, actually full ships for the series. It's just phenomenal. I then later found out, and I was telling you about this, Eric, earlier, that it's a prequel to Treasure Island. Now, the only thing is, this is a mature prequel because it's got, you know, the F-bomb is dropped several times. Of course, it's not an F-bomb when pirates use it, I guess. And then well, there's lots of naked women like premium channels usually do with their series. I mean, Game of Thrones.
Oh, I do not approve of that.
that's probably why you watch Game of Thrones, though. So, it is for a mature audience. But I like the storyline. Eric, you and I were talking to a mutual friend, and he was sitting there saying that the people were too pretty in the series, and it's like, well, yeah, but I mean, what Hollywood actor is not pretty? Have you got a chance to watch any of this?
Harvey Keitel?
Well, I guess you got a point there. And De Niro's not that good looking either, actually. So, so.
And I did want to jump in and say that you know, when you were introducing Starz, Starz is known with most nerds as being the network that put the final stake in the heart of Torchwood.
Oh yeah, they were, weren't they? Oh my gosh,
yes,
yeah.
They were.
It's like when they brought the whole group of Torchwood, the group to America. I was like, that they failed with Doctor Who. Why are they going to try it with Torchwood? So,
yeah,
it's because when Americans tried to do Doctor Who, that just was horrible. Well, okay, it wasn't horrible, but it wasn't that great. But and then the Torchwood. What was the guy's name? The American actor that was in that?
Oh,
he was dead throughout the whole show.
I can't remember his name.
I can't.
You know. I see his face in my. I can see his face in my mind, but I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's done a lot of American movies and shows.
Yeah. Oh, I can't remember. But he was like dead. The whole premise of the thing was that nobody could die anymore, and with Captain Jack Harkness, you know, he can't die. Period. All of a sudden, he could die. So it was weird. Yeah, you're right. That's the best way to put Starz. But so far, the series seems pretty good. It's well written. I really like some of the interaction, and they're building on something that's going to happen. And from what I understand, they're going to be short seasons. So we'll have to, I don't know how. They've only got 5 episodes out so far, and I'm only on number 3. So, but they're building up to a big booty in pirate speak. But anyhow, so all right, Eric, what do you got to talk about TV this week?
Well, let's see here. Since I finished my show, which incidentally went off very well, we had 2 sellout performances and good word of mouth. But anyway, now that that's all done and over with, I'm getting to slowly catch up on my TV viewing. Mm-hmm. And I have recently watched. Let's hear. What did I watch? Well, I saw the last episode of Blacklist, which I was mentioning to you, which you weren't able to see because it didn't record. But it is pretty good. It's definitely, you know, I enjoy watching James Spader. He's fun actor to watch, and he's got wings as an actor, you know, so he can definitely do that role, and he's good at it. But there's not a whole lot of mythology development going on. I mean, we know that he killed the old lady that was the head of their unit, who was dirty, and mm-hmm. I like the way that he dispatched her in a pretty, you know, he's not a good guy, all right? And I like the way that they're not shying away from the fact that he is not a good guy, but it's like that whole honor among thieves thing. He's an honorable criminal. He has a code that he lives by, and he won't cross that line. And, you know, of all the people in the series, I'm forgetting the girl's name, Elizabeth, mm-hmm. Lizzie. Mm-hmm. He is the one character that when she's with him, you believe that she is, that he will do anything to protect her. He is the one person who you believe that she can count on in a tight spot. And you know what, you know, whether it's because she is his daughter, which seems to be the implication, or some other connection, which we haven't seen yet, remains to be seen. But when he says he's going to do something, he does it. But I do like the way that the show doesn't shy away from the fact that he is a murderer, mm-hmm. and he will, you know, if someone crosses him, he has no no second thoughts about dispatching them in a nasty way.
Yeah, yeah, and, so and he has no he's never really upset about having to dispatch with people either.
No, you know, he doesn't seem to have any remorse about it either.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I think he maybe even has referred to himself once or twice as a sociopath.
Yeah.
Which would be pretty fitting in his, you know, that considering his behavior and his preoccupations. But nonetheless, it makes a really interesting show, you know, that, you know, you've got this, you know, hardcore criminal, and then you've got this, you know, well, I don't want to say goody two shoes, but she is a little goody two shoes, mm-hmm. FBI agent. Although, and this is not a huge spoiler, but and maybe they had mentioned something previously and I just missed it. But apparently Lizzie has had a past of grifting and thievery or something before she joined the law enforcement.
Oh.
They didn't really go into great detail about that, but it's definitely implied and hinted at here.
Okay, no, I hadn't caught that before.
Yeah, which would be even, you know, more interesting if she is indeed the daughter of Reddington. So
right, yeah.
But anyway, it was a good episode, and I also got caught up with Helix.
Oh, I love that series.
I'm kind of on the fence, but it's getting better now. There was a long period where there really wasn't much happening, and it felt like it was being drawn out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I'm like, guys, if you don't throw in a twist here, you're going to lose your audience. But they introduced Jerry Ryan, who all nerds will know as from Star Trek.
Yeah, 7 of 9.
Yes. And she's still very attractive, and she does a good job in the role. She's, you know, all smiles, but, you know, you never doubt for a second that she is a snake and will, you know, will put a knife in your back the second she gets the chance. And I like that storyline. I like what they've done with the resolution there, which I won't spoil for anyone who hasn't gotten caught up. But, it is starting to develop a little more and you know, to pick up a little steam, so I'm sticking with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, also us in Illinois will know Jerry Ryan as the ex-wife of one of our former governors. But that's beside the point. One thing I really love about this show, and I don't know why it is, but it just sticks with me on every single episode, is that lounge music they use every time. Especially at the beginning and the end of each episode, it's just so cool. Well, it doesn't belong, is what it is. And I like it that much. Like, do you know The Way to San Jose was like the first song that they used on there? And it's like, then they started all this weird loungy type music. I don't know why
it works.
Yeah, it does. And it makes it just, as soon as you hear it, you know the show's over, but it's like, that's so cool to put that there. So, and the whole, you're not so sure whether the, and I like this about the, about Helix, is that you're not so sure what the virus actually is. Whether it's something that's going to make superhumans, or is it making zombies, or are there two different viruses? I'm thinking along the lines there's two different viruses that they got going on here.
Right. And they said that it's, you know, I mean, he got, or at least he managed to get Hitaki to say that, you know, this was as a cure for cancer. But
yeah.
I don't buy it. I think there's more there than what he's saying. I don't believe that these side effects were completely surprising. I think that they're looking for some sort of super soldier something of that effect.
And also another thing that they've hinted at a couple times, I can't quote exactly the hints, but it seems like there may be more people at this base than they realize too. I think there's like thousands of people at this base rather than the maybe 100 or so.
Oh, really?
Yeah. One of the things is when it talks about Hitaki, you know, kidnapping the children.
Right.
And there's that aspect. And then one of the doctors had been there before. That little aspect of, but they've said a couple of things that there's more levels of this base than what they're aware of, or at least what the CDC is aware of. So.
Yeah, you may be right.
I think there's something going on back even further that we're going to be finding out pretty soon. So I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
Bring up another TV show. Are you watching Supernatural? Are you up to date on Supernatural?
No. I got the first two seasons and then I got distracted. I haven't gotten back to it, but it's on my list.
It's on
long list. But
I was going to say, and the growing list too, I imagine.
Yeah.
Well, I know Isaac and I watch Supernatural. Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk about that real quick before you moved on to another one here. The latest episode, They brought what's his name again, Isaac? The prophet?
Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin. They reunited him with his mom, even though he's a ghost, and they rescued his mom. But that was the cool episode. What's even cooler is next week's episode, they're bringing back the Ghost Facers. And are you familiar? Have you got to the Ghost Facers yet, Eric?
Ghost Facers?
Ghost Facers. So. They're guys that do like they do like a Ghost Hunters TV show. And
it's more or less a web series.
Yeah, it's a web series of ghost hunters, and these guys, they're just so funny, they're so goofy. They're more along the lines of Ghost Adventures in their goofiness. But basically they think they're hunting ghosts, and then when Sam and Dean come in, they're like, "Holy crap, it's real!" You know. But anyway, they're bringing them back on another episode coming up, and so it's going to be another one of those funny episodes. That's one thing
I
like.
At first, I thought it was a parody of Supernatural when we first watched the first episode. Like,
yeah,
I didn't think it was actually part of one episode.
Yeah, it seemed like they were doing a parody of it. You're right, exactly. It was like, oh, the ghosts hate this, and then you know, silly things. But the one thing that this season has been, it's been a real dark season on Supernatural. And one of the things I really like about Supernatural is that every once in a while they'll pull out a funny episode. Like there's the one where Dean is constantly dying. There's the one where he catches the disease that he's afraid of everything. And I mean, those are some hilarious. Especially they used to have Loki make an appearance, and those were like the funniest episodes. And they kind of got away with this whole season has been real dark, and they're battling each other really. But finally they're bringing the Ghost Facers in, so they're going to go back to the good old funny stuff once in a while. And that's what's good about the series is they can laugh at themselves, and they do so. In fact, they even did one episode in one of the previous seasons where they were in an alternate universe where they were actually stars of a show called Supernatural. And the guy, and I loved it. Dean said, "I'm some guy named Jensen Ackles." And then he goes, "I'm Jared Padalecki." He goes, "What, are you Polish?" So it was just hilarious. I mean, it looks like they're going to bring it back. So this whole season, at first, I was worried it was going to be all dark. But looks like next week's episode is going to be back to the humor, which is a good thing. So, but I had to throw that in. And one more thing about television. Arrow. Are you watching it, Eric?
No, okay. It hasn't made it onto my watch list yet.
You need to get that on there. They're actually doing a good job with it. One of the things the CW, I'd heard said before that they don't like doing superhero shows that have with the heroes having superpowers. They don't like to display their superpowers, and that's even more so. I think you and I are talking about it online before about Gotham coming up. They're going to, maybe it's someone else, but Gotham, they're doing a series based on Commissioner Gordon before he was Commissioner, back when he was a real police officer. And actually, Bruce Wayne, Batman, is only like 10 to 12 years old. And so it's like, is anybody really going to be interested in this? I'm not so sure. And the CW, they supposedly have a policy where they don't like to have superpowers. Well, on Arrow, they're actually developing. Right now, Arrow has got the Black Canary with them. Green Arrow and Black Canary, comic book nerds will know, they're a team. You know, they have to be together, so they got them going. Slade Wilson, also known as Deadshot, he's in here.
You mean Deathstroke?
I mean Deathstroke. Deadshot's a Marvel guy.
Deadshot, oh yeah, that's a perfect name.
Yeah, Deathstroke is his name. And so they're really bringing in all the Marvel mythos. But they've also got the Flash developing, and he's got actual superpowers, and he's going to, you know, there's just no way around it. And they introduced him already. They showed him getting his powers. So I think with Arrow, they're going to start going away from that policy and actually work in superpowers and actually.
I have an idea of how they could make it without superpowers.
How?
Well, that lightning could have given him, like, kind of a more sense of smartness, and then he could develop high speed shoes or something.
No, I think they're actually going to go with powers though, because that's really if they don't want to lose an audience, they're going to have to do it that way. But
can I just jump in and ask a question? After
sure.
You said that, it's just been stuck in my head. Okay, if you don't want to make a show about a character who has superpowers, why are you making a show about a superhero? That's like saying, "Oh, I want to make a show about Nazis, but I don't want any Germans in it."
Right, exactly. Well, see, I asked that same question throughout the whole, however many seasons of Smallville there were. I mean, never would he fly, you know, and he's Superman, dang it, you know.
Yeah.
So, and not till the last episode, I'm like, come on. How, and, I mean, sure, they had little things he could do once in a while, okay, you know, but they didn't totally explain that. And I'm like, you're exactly right. Why do a superhero if you're not going to have superpowers? And that's, hey, they're looks like they're steering away from that. I've even heard rumors that Aquaman is supposed to make an appearance, which I think is going to be odd.
People don't like Aquaman, but who's going to be saving you whenever you're getting eaten by a shark?
I know. Hey, that's where you need Aquaman. But so I don't know what's going to happen with it, but it looks like they're going away from that policy. And I agree with you, Eric. Every season of Smallville, I'm like, why are you doing a Superman series, and yet he doesn't have any of his superpowers? You know, I just hated that. And that's one of the reasons I was real skeptical about Arrow. But they told the backstory, and they're still telling the backstory. In fact, the whole this is one thing. The whole backstory of Arrow is him on landing on an island, and that's where he got trained, and that's where he became a changed person. Oliver Queen did, and it's almost the way that they're telling this backstory. It's almost like watching the whole season or the whole series of Lost again. It's really weird. It's starting to be like, okay, did the island really happen or not? So, but anyway, it looks like they're veering away from it with the latest episode of Arrow, and I think, and actually, Speedy, and if you read the comic books, Green Arrow's sidekick, he's got some superpowers. And they've actually shown how he got those powers in this series. So, again, I think CW's making the right move and actually telling superhero shows the right way. So, we'll see what happens. They just need to bring Nightwing in there, then we'll be happy. So, all right, there's my rant for the Arrow. So, go ahead, Eric. What else you got?
As an adjunct to what you were just talking about, I over this past week, I was talking to a friend of mine about we were talking about the new Godzilla trailer, which I'm sure you've seen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is very intriguing. And I'm not a big fan of Godzilla movies, okay? I used to, I would love watching them on Mystery Science Theater 3000 where they make fun of them. But actually sitting there and watching Godzilla movies just, I don't know, I never really did it for me. I've got lots of friends that are into them, but it just never really worked for me. I know that you guys are probably going to chastise me for this, but I still have not seen a Transformers movie, and I have no desire to.
Yeah.
The idea just doesn't really work for me. The trailers didn't do anything for me. But when Pacific Rim came out, I wanted to go see it because it was Guillermo del Toro, and I love almost everything he's done.
Right.
Not everything, but the majority of everything, the films he's made, I've really enjoyed. Well, I've got it on Blu-ray, and I still haven't gotten around to watching it, is on my list to watch. But anyway, I was talking to him about that. We started talking about the new Godzilla movie, and that transitioned into Pacific Rim. And then, you know, I mentioned how much I like the films of Guillermo del Toro, and my friend really wasn't that familiar with him. So I went to IMDb, and I was, you know, I could told him most of his films off the top of my head, but I'm like, I'm sure I'm missing something. So when I was looking at his credits on IMDb, I noticed that he has created or is listed as creating a 2014 television series, not the vampire one,
okay,
but the Incredible Hulk, a TV series.
What?
Yes. Okay, but now I've done some additional research online, and it seems to be divided into two camps. One camp says that it's been completely canned because they started this before the Avengers movie came out, and they had no idea that it was going to be as successful as it was, and that it was going to spawn, you know, all these sequels and spinoffs and blah, 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 so that it's been basically just completely 86'd, and they're not going to do it.
Oh.
But there's another camp, and there seems to be some substance behind this, that it is still on the back burner, and they are still thinking of doing it, but they want to do at least one more Hulk movie before they go forward with the series. And my thought is like, okay, how are they going to do this? Because are they really going to be able to get Mark Ruffalo to do a TV series week in and week, you know, every single week? And if not, how are they going to do that? Because they can't have two people doing the Hulk. But from what I've been reading, they are going to have two people doing the Hulk because they're going to do the Smallville thing. They're going to go back to when and I don't know how this is going to work because Bruce Banner didn't become a Hulk till he was an adult, but they're doing a young Hulk.
What?
I don't know how they're. Yeah, I don't know how that's going to work, but that's what I read. but like I said, take that with a grain of salt because I've been reading a lot of stuff that's completely contradictory to other things. But I'm hoping that they eventually do a Hulk series. It's going to be. They said that it's going to be based off of the original Incredible Hulk series that I dearly loved and grew up watching, but it's going to be updated and it's going to be definitely a spinoff of the existing Marvel universe. So it's going to be kind of like a merge of the two. Okay. But it sounds like that they want to do a similar structure, you know, to the old series, which is, you know, the Hulk goes to a new town every, you know, someone's chasing the Hulk. He goes to a new town every week and, you know, gets into a new adventure and then has to leave because whatever's on his tail is catching up with him.
Right.
I kind of like that formula, or at least I did as a kid. And I've got it in my next Netflix queue because I haven't watched it since I was a kid, and I don't know if it'll still hold up, but I do want to go back and rewatch those episodes.
Well, I've got the whole box set of the entire series of The Incredible Hulk, and I keep wanting to watch that, but at the same time, I'm like, well, is it going to be as good as I remember it? So it's still in the box set. I haven't opened it yet, so... But I want to say, maybe they could do it just like they did the TV series. Because now the TV series, okay, the comic books, it's Bruce Banner, okay? The TV series, it's David Banner.
David Banner.
Yeah. So maybe they could do some kind of thing like, okay, this is not really
alternate
him.
Universe?
Yeah, there you go, alternate universe. I mean, Marvel and DC both have done alternate universes for years. You've got the whole – I mean, that's one of the whole branches of the New 52 for DC Comics is that they had so many alternate universes go on that they said, okay, we got to stop this and and center it back at, you know, how it's supposed to be. And so that's one of the reasons. So maybe they could do an alternate universe Hulk. General idea, but a little bit of continuity on their own. So who knows?
But can you imagine a Hulk series that's created by Guillermo del Toro?
I know, right? As soon as you said Guillermo del Toro and Hulk at the same time, I'm like, what? That's awesome. Actually,
yeah.
No matter what they do. You mentioned The Strain. Now, is that going to be a TV series, the vampire one?
It's a mini series.
Okay, because, man, the storyline behind that, it's a totally new look at vampires. And wow, it's creepy. The books are just totally creepy. And
I read the first one. I like the first one.
Yeah, I've read the first two. There's only three in the it's a trilogy. I haven't got to the third one yet. I've read the first two books. Now there's a comic book series two out, based on those first two books so far, and they're gonna do the whole series, all three books in comic book form. But they've got the first two already out in comic book form, and I haven't read them, but I've got them ready to go. On my comic book reader app, so when I get time, maybe I will. But yeah, Guillermo del Toro has just got a whole different point of view. Whatever he does, it's like it's just cool way to do things. So
yes, I agree.
That'd be interesting. So cool.
All right. Well, there's three more shows I was going to bring up. I'll just go ahead and plow through them that I watched this week. I got caught up with The Walking Dead.
Oh yeah.
Are you still watching that?
Oh yes, of course.
And Tim Coker, who we're hopefully going to have on the podcast coming up. I've been talking to him about this because he started watching the first season and he didn't like the first season, and he stopped watching it either somewhere around there. And of course, the second season was really weak.
Yeah.
And he had heard that as well, so he didn't have any desire to go back to it. But I've been trying to get him to go back and watch it because I was like, okay, starting with the third season, they really get the show on track.
Right.
And this season, I think, has been probably as strong or stronger than than anything they've done yet.
I'd agree.
Now the after the break, the first episode seemed a little slow to me. I was like, okay, the father and son reconciliation thing, and I was like, yeah, I know, let's get on with it. But
they gave us big cans of pudding, so hey, you know.
but once Michonne came back into the picture, this last episode I really, really liked a lot. And I mean, not that much happens. It was really a character episode for Michonne and Carl.
Right.
And And yeah, okay. When Michonne started on the show, I really wanted to like her because I'd heard about her character in the comic and that she's this really kick-ass heroine. And, you know, and I really wanted to like her, but she just, all she did was scowl all the time.
I know,
all
right?
She did was scowl. And I just couldn't get into her character at all. But now she's opened up and she's really just a good actress, and she's really has a lot of pathos and a lot of emotion in her lines. You know, it's like when she says something, you can see there's something going on behind her eyes.
Yeah.
And
well, she's
smiled
a couple times too, though.
So. Oh yeah, she smiles a lot now.
Yeah.
And she's, I mean, I just really love the interaction between her and Carl.
Yep.
And Carl and her, you know, revealing bits about her child and her past. And
yep.
It's just, I really have come full circle with Michonne. And I mean, I just dearly love her. She's one of my favorite characters on the show now. And so I was really happy to see that just, you know, nothing happened, just a character episode where we get to learn a little bit more about her and see a different side of her, you know?
Right. And then with the other aspect of it is actually they're getting back to more of the comics feel of the storyline. See, that's one thing with the season 2 and part of season 3, they kind of strayed away from the comics. And I think that's what was the worst part about it. With they went the first season they were with the comics almost 100%. I mean, they had a few variations. Okay, we'll say 75%. Season 2 and 3 maybe 40%. Pretty much the zombies were the only thing in continuity-wise with the comic books. But now they're getting back into it, especially with the introduction that Glenn and I can't remember the other lady's name, but they met up with the soldier
right.
and the scientist. And
yep,
anybody reading the comics, okay, well, first of all, the scientist says he knows what's caused this, he knows how to fix it, and they're escorting him to Washington. Well, anybody that reads the comics is knowing, it's like, yeah, okay, we're going to have some fun now because the guy – I mean, spoiler here, and if you haven't read the comics, I'm sorry, but he doesn't have a clue. He's just a big weenie that needs protecting, and that's what and that's pretty much the basis of this. But the way he carries it on is just beautifully done in the comics. That he's got everybody fooled, and the way he fools everybody, they fool the reader too. But there's the Robert Kirkman, he dropped hints throughout the comic book that's like, oh, yeah, this guy's full of it. But they're coming back to the comics in that aspect, and I think that's another reason why this season or this part of the season is actually getting better is because they're getting back to the comics.
Oh, can I just say I could not take my eyes off of Rosarita. She is
Well, you know, I didn't notice I was watching zombies. So anyway, you're right. This season of Walking Dead is definitely picked up, and I think, and it's funny because I heard during the mid-season break, I'd heard that Robert Kirkman was not going to be a consultant anymore, and he was not going to have anything to do with the series. But the way they're going with the series, it's like they're going back to the comics. They almost have to keep him as a consultant if they're going to do it that way. So. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
I've heard nothing but that Kirkman is very much of a control freak when it comes to this show. And so for him to just say, oh, I'm going to leave it in someone else's hands just sounds really odd.
Well, the internet rumor I heard was that he didn't have much choice in the matter. So
really?
Yeah, that's what I was – I think I'd mentioned it on a previous podcast, and I was upset when I read that. But, again, we all know how internet rumors go.
Right.
Don't believe any
but
of them
I
until
also,
it happens.
Yeah, but I also know that the people that are running AMC are not the most liberal or easy to get along with people, and that they've driven off a number of people and made a number of bad decisions in my mind. But they've managed to keep it afloat, and they're still doing good shows. So I mean, I can't fault them too much.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So all right. Well, what else you got there, Eric?
All right. Well, I also got caught up. I'd already, but I wasn't behind on it. But they took a hiatus, and Friday night last night they had the Grimm returned.
Oh.
And that was a fun episode. You know, the whole thing with Monroe and his parents. I really like that, and I mean, I just love the character Monroe and Rosalie, and I really like watching those guys and their, you know, and the difficulties of their relationship and whatnot. And so it was a good episode. I really liked that part of it.
I've got it recorded, so it's like I haven't seen it yet, but I will.
Okay.
Yeah, Monroe is definitely my favorite character in that series. He's the one.
Yeah.
Once they introduced him in the series, and actually made him more regular than I was hooked at that point on. So
yeah, but same here.
So they, yeah, I forgot that I know it's DVR because I remember seeing it on my seeing it being recorded at the time I was watching something else. So
and they also mentioned the Great Hunt that you had talked to me about being. Yeah, so they talk more about that. So, you know, not a whole lot more, but it is mentioned.
Okay.
Yeah, so that storyline is still going on, too, although there's some resolution to it. But, well, you'll see when you see it.
All right.
and of course, if anyone who's been listening to me on this podcast knows that I am a freak when it comes to Hannibal, and it has finally returned as of last night, season 2, and I was enthralled. I just love this show so much. I can't even express how much this show thrills me, because the writing and the way it's shot, it's so artistically done, and it doesn't spell anything out for you. It really has respect for its viewers' intelligence, all five of us.
Well, one thing I got to ask you this: why do you think it's not getting a huge response? I mean, you don't hear that much about it.
Well, I was actually talking to the other Tim, who was also supposed to be on today's podcast. Yeah. Well, hopefully, will be next week.
Yeah.
He started watching it, and he kind of lost interest in it because he couldn't connect with the main character of Will Graham.
Okay.
And I totally understand that. Will Graham is a very prickly character, and he pushes people away, and he admits that he is borderline psychotic he's walking a very fine edge.
Uh-huh.
And there's some question about whether he might have crossed over that edge. But he is a little off-putting, but I find him very sympathetic. I understand, I feel sorry for his plight, and I understand the situation that he's in. And I don't really have that much problem connecting with him, but I can see why people might. So I think that that's one reason why there isn't a huge audience for the show. But the main reason is this is a bloody, violent show.
Yeah.
It is amazingly so. I mean, this is like on par of something that you would see on cable.
Yeah.
And, you know, the first time I saw this on NBC, I kept doing a double take. I was like, this is really on network television?
Yeah. Well, one of the things about it, we watched The Walking Dead, and I've seen a few episodes of Hannibal, and it's more gruesome than The Walking Dead.
It is.
And I think the reason why is because this is a reality-based gruesome, you know what I mean?
Right.
Whereas Walking Dead, that's a kind of a fantasy gross thing.
Right, exactly.
And I think, you know, basically in Hannibal, it's like, this could happen. So,
right.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right.
And there's a certain delight that the producers take. And I don't want to – delight isn't maybe the right word. But there's a fascination in this kind of grand guignol presentation of gore and violence. I mean, they do these – it's almost like – God, I don't know how to explain it, but it's almost like a piece of art on canvas, the way that they present these bodies in a tableau. And there is that that aspect is very intentional, and that's part of the psyche of these killers, because there are multiple killers. You know, there is that kind of killer of the week episode thing, but it's mostly at this point really a continuing story. But, you know, new killers will come in and come out because, you know, Will Graham is a profiler, and he, you know, right, they have to give him something to do in between episodes. But I like the way that they tie in the killers of the week with the main storyline, so it's not completely separated from what's going on with Hannibal and Jack Crawford.
Right.
But here's the thing, and I'm going to get into, you know, some spoiler territory, but, you know, I hopefully it will inspire people to go back and watch season one. In this episode, we see at the very beginning Jack Crawford having dinner. Now, Will Graham has been put in prison because he's been framed by Hannibal as being the person who committed all these murders, ingeniously so. He's put him in a position where it's going to be very, very difficult for Will to be able to prove his innocence. So Will's away in prison, or not prison, but in a psychiatric facility, and you see at the beginning of the episode Jack Crawford, played by Lawrence Fishburne, having dinner with Hannibal, and at one point, the gloves come off, and apparently, Jack Crawford has figured out that Hannibal is the killer, and they have this long, drawn-out fight in which you see Jack Crawford get stabbed in the neck, and apparently it's in the jugular because blood is, like, spurting out pretty badly. So... Oh. But then they cut away and they say 12 weeks earlier, and they go back to 12 weeks earlier, and they never pick that thread up again. So apparently what they're doing this season is the entire season is going to be leading up to that moment.
Oh, wow.
I can't imagine that they're going to kill off Jack Crawford, but I can't imagine unless he gets like medical help like immediately. I can't imagine how he's going to survive
Well, as an aside, they can't kill him off because he's got to be in the next Marvel movie. Oh, wait, that's the other guy. Sorry, I had to make that joke, since even though it's a couple weeks old.
But if I can convince anyone to watch this show to keep it from being canceled, I love this show so much. And if you have as long as you have a stomach for these things, I think that you'll be as fascinated as I am. I mean, it really is just one of the best written and produced shows on television. It's produced by Brian Fuller, who cut his teeth on Star Trek Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. He also created the, I believe it was Dead Like Me, which I never watched, and it's on my list to go back and watch. But he also created, what was the name of that show? It's just driving me crazy now, about the pie maker who could touch people and bring them back to life.
What?
Pushing Daisies.
And
no one watched Pushing Daisies either, and that was a brilliant, brilliant, groundbreaking show that it was just endlessly entertaining and completely unlike anything that's ever been on television. But that show is what made me into a Brian Fuller fan. Once I saw that, I was like, I remembered his name and will always remember his name. So anyone, check it out. It's the first season's on Blu-ray. I don't know if it's on Netflix or not, but if it isn't, I'm sure it probably will be eventually. Just a very, very good show and worth watching, and help save Hannibal.
There you go. Well, let me ask you this: if like your worst nightmare came true and they did cancel it, could you see that being put on like one of the premium channels?
Oh, definitely.
I mean, they had success with Dexter on Cinemax. I mean, why not this on even Stars?
Yeah, or I mean, it wouldn't even have to be a premium channel. I mean, AMC, any channel could pick this up, and probably find some success with it. It's just network TV. The majority of people that still watch network TV, unfortunately, are not the edgiest crowd.
Yeah, they're usually watching Dancing with the Stars anyway. So
yeah. Although I have to give NBC credit and bash them at the same time. NBC does tend to be riskier than any of the other networks in the shows that they put on. Mm-hmm. But they're also the quickest of anyone to cancel them at the first sign that they're not making money. We've got to get rid of them now.
True.
It's a love-hate relationship I have with NBC.
Well, all right, I'm going to start watching Hannibal then under your advisement. I'm going to watch this new season, the first episode. We'll see if I can get back into it. I mean, I saw a few episodes of the first season, and I was intrigued by it, but it just wasn't it didn't push me enough to say, I got to watch this every week. So I'm going to give it a second chance, Eric. You talked me into it.
And I had forgotten, too, about how much fantasy footage there is. Like, they do all this... all these sequences that are taking place in Will Graham's head, mm-hmm. that are just really, really hallucinatory and really out there. And that's part of what I love about it, too, is it's so damn trippy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. I'll have to give it a chance. Now, see, the thing is, though, I'm afraid to jump into a series because, for example, I watched the series Awake. Loved that show.
Yeah.
And then they went and canceled it. And I'm like, I'm just getting into it. This is awesome. And then, boom, it's gone. So.
Yeah, that was another show that was brilliantly written, and I just was really in awe of it and so disappointed when they canceled it.
Yeah.
And Jason Isaacs was just perfect in that part.
Oh,
I was
And then you had the whole – we're totally getting on a tangent here, but the whole one world, everything was red, one world, everything was green. And they did, and it's so subtle that they did it that way, but – man. All right. I'm going to give it a second chance. Maybe we can save Hannibal. I'll tell you what, that pretty much does it for this segment of the podcast. Like I said, we've got an interview with Mark Wilson, the author of the book Dedenborough, Zombie Plague Young Adult dystopian novel. And we'll be talking with Mark here in a little bit. Now, again, I got to warn you, listeners, or at least be ready. It's an overseas Skype conversation, so the connection was not that it was not perfect. So you're going to hear a little bit of lag.
Quite put the up, opposite.
Put up a little bit of sound error, and you got some good information coming out about this book, and it's really good. It seems like it. I've got it on my tablet, getting ready to read it, and so I wanted to interview him because the idea was so great. So we'll be talking with Mark Wilson here in a little bit. And also, don't forget the Loot Crate unboxing coming up, and then we'll end the podcast. So in the meantime, that's it for this segment. Stay tuned for the interview with Mark Wilson.
www.gilwilson.com.
If you need quality voice work for your radio commercials, audio for TV commercials, or maybe just for that message on hold for your business, you need to check out
www.gilwilson.com.
GILWILSON.com. www.gilwilson.com. Check it out. It's quirky. It's fun. It's innovative.
All right, welcome back to the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Gil T. Wilson here with my son,
Isaac Wilson.
And we've got a special guest besides Isaac. No, we got Mark Wilson. Now, I will have to say, Mark is not related. However, maybe somewhere in my ancestry, there's a tie in the family tree somewhere because I traced it back to Edinburgh about, I think, what, about the 1700s? And some guys sold themselves to indentured across the sea on the boat and then escaped, and that was became my family. They're a bunch of people that reneged on their deal. So that's my family. So maybe somewhere we're related, Mark. So welcome to the podcast, Mark Wilson.
Thank you.
First of all, Mark's got a book out that's actually going to be released in paperback March 10th, and it's called Edinburgh, an adult novel. It's kind of a dystopian novel. Actually, it is a dystopian novel. And I'm going to let Mark explain the book himself. I love dystopian novels anyway. I've loved everything that, you know, ever since I read 1984, I've been hooked on bleak futures or promising futures. And Mark's book basically starts out in Edinburgh when the plague was rampant. And, well, give us a little rundown of what the story is about, first of all.
Sure. I've been wanting a city novel for one. You know, I'm lucky that I live in such a gothic-looking city. It's very cobbled streets. It's very gothic buildings. And I hadn't really written any stories that did the setting justice before. So I wanted to use that setting for something. And I've been reading a lot of Jonathan Mayberry's books are fantastic.
Oh, I love his
Rotten
books.
Yeah, Rotten series has been wonderful. And I would normally write in either really the young adult genre or even the dystopian or zombies or, you know, even if you want to look at it as a horror genre. Having read such a Jonathan's books recently and walking around this really gothic city, it just seemed like an ideal place to do that kind of story and to be able to put characters in some really creepy, threatening settings. I kind of go with that. So I heard a story in 1645 in Edinburgh. Lots of the city has underground town, and essentially the crypts and dungeons. But they were full of stores, businesses, houses underneath here, and places where like the city. So quite an interesting backstory to the city, and I think that all these towns are underneath the city I live in, and they've been sealed up. So I kind of wanted to do something with that. And, in research, I came across plague information. Plague was at its height in 1640-ish, and there's a very strong myth in Edinburgh that plague victims were sealed in one of these underground towns, and they were sealed in and kind of quarantined off from the rest of the city. And my brain tells me that it's not true, but the myth persists anyway. So I thought I could use a starting point, and the book doesn't really address that other than mention it through one of the characters' journals. But I've taken it from the book, it was true, and these people were sealed in there, and the plague mutated, and they opened it up as a tourist attraction in 2015, and things kicked off.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I like the edit. Now, I gotta warn our listeners and you, right now, for some reason, interference on the connection here. But I just so people know, it's like, okay, I'm trying to do what I can to fix it. Anyway, that's one of the things that's find intriguing is that, okay, living in a historical city, there's like so much. Like you said, a Gothic city, and it's got to be a great setting. Here I am stuck in the middle of Illinois, and there's pretty much nothing scary around. So I guess I couldn't come up. But the idea that the plague. Now you said that in the book, the people are sealed in the city.
Yeah.
So, and you said that was a myth.
Yeah, the story persists. Most section of, I suppose it would have been people who were living in poverty at the time, were sealed in this underground area. In Scotland, we call it a close. These kind of dungeon areas are called. So this particular one is named Mary King's Close. And really, it's pits and dungeons beneath the surface. And actually, I took a little tour. It is open to tourists. I opened it a bit ago to tourists. And it's a very odd place to be in the daylight that gets through it.
Wow.
And you can see where people lived, where they slept, ran businesses. It's a very odd place to be. A very good place to sit and dream up things to happen.
Yeah, I guess so. Definitely so. Now, the idea behind 2015, they unseal it. The survivors, basically the people that were sealed up below, generations have passed, and the plague is mutated. Now, how do we get to the year 2050 in your book?
The book actually begins in the year 2015 as a flashback, and my main characters were born in the city. Now, just to give you the kind of the backstory comes out as the book progresses. We start off in actually 2050. So the city's been sealed off after the plague escaped in 2050. The entire city was sealed off to kind of mirror what was happening with Mary King's Close 400 years before. And it's almost like it's come back. The city has been punished for what it did to Mary King's Close residents. So the story is sealed off the entire city, built walls around it, and kind of left the residents to it, much in the way that the historic residents of the underground town were left. And we join the book at the beginning, 35 years after the quarantine. The kids that we follow, they've been born in that dead city, and they don't know anything other than that. But one of the kids is taken under the wing of a former preacher. We kind of get the history of the city with excerpts from his book throughout the book, so that we can keep the main characters, the two teens, moving forward in the future, whereas his glances into the past journal kind of give us the history from 1645 to the sealing of the city onwards.
Oh, okay. Now that makes a little more sense. So basically, that's basically the book takes place in the near future. And you've gone in and added the history through the journals. Great method of getting the history involved in there. I like the journal.
Thanks. Well, I really had to find a mechanism that didn't break up the flow of the main character story.
Right.
And to give them a mentor who kind of passes them a journal, it means you can just draw things in and it doesn't break it up. And, the reader can choose to read the search or not and still progress without them.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So the main character, would it be the or would it be Alice Shepard? Who's her main character in your book here? I'm going with this. I'm getting ready to read the book. I wanted to talk to you before we got it. So,
sure.
But who's the character of this?
When I was writing it, I only intended it for it to be Joyce. And Alice, I wrote her first chapter. I decided more than I like Joy. So... I used both character and they have their own separate little stories going on and they kind of converge and diverge with the story. And I think it depends who's reading it. I'm a big star. I'm a big star for me at my age. Luke Skywalker was the main character, but my older cousin Solo was the main character. So I think maybe it'll depend who the reader relates more. I didn't favor either one of them with story time I'm not sure, to be honest.
But you got two main characters then, I guess. Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense then. Basically, these guys now have to survive, and yet there could be a cure in the fact that they're seeking a cure of some sort. But at the same time, it's survival. I mean, that's what a zombie novel is about. Like the Rotten Ruin, like you mentioned of Jonathan Mayberry earlier, those are just survival. It's not really the zombies that are characters. It's the survival of the human race. So I may have got onto something here.
Well, you're absolutely right. When I started plotting the novel in my head, I had Joey and I had the people around him moving him forward to characters. It was that I don't want to describe the zombies that were around to play a part in the story, but it's about the characters and it's about how they feel about for 35 years. People have accepted that they'll be abandoned, but they're positive. Their lives are completely in their own hands, and I live life much more than we do in the current day and present. And that was kind of get across. And at some points in the book, I kind of became aware as I was writing it that.
All right, now I got to ask you. There's one little final question about the book I have for you, and that is this little gruesome thing you put in here about a guy, a character named Somna, who I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right. Anyway, he collects trophies. He collects dead bodies or what is he collects trophies, but he worships the dead body of a former celebrity.
Yeah.
What? How did that come about?
I really like books with a social commentary, and I'm trying really hard not to give too much plot away, but the social trying hard not to be judgmental, but Somna is very much a representative of celebrity worship. He's a horrific man. He collects eyelids from his victims.
Oh, and nice.
He has no eyelids of his own, and he worships the reanimated body of Geldo, who happens to be one of the most famous footballers in the world, who remains nameless. But he's a horrific person, and his name Somna is from a mythical god of sleep, and that becomes more relevant with the second book. Somna becomes a huge character in the second book.
Okay, actually. Okay. Well, then I'm definitely. That part there. Well, that's kind of creepy.
So
got me to want to read it. So I'll be reading it soon, and we'll be talking to you again soon. But in the meantime, let the people know how to get a hold of your book right now.
Okay, the ebook is available on Amazon worldwide just now, and we're already garnering some pretty positive reviews from the young adult community. And with my history, sometimes it's not been very positive, and the young adult in America that have recruited into review for me, they're really loving it so far, which is great. It's been unexpected, and it's been really positive, so it's been fantastic. So it's available on Amazon present on March 10th. It'll be basically everywhere on paperback. It'll be Barnes & Noble, Amazon. It'll be out wherever you can buy a book. That's where it'll be.
All right, so if I can search on Amazon for their Kindle right now, it's Dedenberg. Yeah. Dedenberg is the name of the book. It's Dedenburgh. There we go. So if you want to buy it, so look for that. And 10th, it'll be available on paperback. Now, you've also got some other books out.
My most recent work before Dedenburgh was a book called Head Boy. And Head Boy, I set in Scotland, in plain English rather than Scottish dialect. So it's fairly accessible for an international audience. And it follows it's not intended audience. It follows my, it's a head boy in school. I don't know if you guys have a girl sister.
No, we don't.
It's a valedictorian kind of thing, I suppose.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so he's well respected, but he happens to be a serial killer. So we follow him around in his exploits. That's probably my favorite book to write, to be before Deborah. To annoy a young adult crowd, it would be
okay. All right, I'll tell you what, appreciate you joining us today. I'm gonna a little bit short, hour or so interview, and then my son, before we do go, my son has a question for you. Hold on a second, let me get his microphone turned up a little bit more.
Be any like creepy plague doctor moments with the masks with the beaks?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, Isaac. Thank you. The place where Joseph grows up is the undergrowth of Mary King's Close. He has lived there since he was. Joseph was found on the cobbles of West Gates, which is the Royal Mile. Very popular with tourists. So he was found there as maybe by a certain person and taken to the underground crypt where the 1645 plague was. And the crypt is occupied by the Brotherhood. The Brotherhood bake zombies and they take care of them. And Joe grows up in the community, so he spends most of his time in darkness, underground, in the air. And one of the people here is a man called Padre Jock. And Padre Jock eventually becomes a mentor. But when the book begins, just a mask who kills zombies. Jock dresses in the traditional plague doctor's outfit for lots of different reasons, which I'm not going to tell you.
All right, good, good. Well, now I think you've intrigued our book again, or read the book. So, because he was a plague doctor last Halloween. That was his Halloween costume.
Oh, yeah.
So he went
all out. It's a very creepy costume.
He didn't have the herb stuffed into the snout part, but, you know.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, thank you very much. Mark Wilson, again, no relation, but maybe somewhere in our ancestry we're related. His family comes from Scotland. He's in Scotland.
Yeah.
And if you want to catch his book, once again, get it now at Edinburgh, English, American, and Scottish. Edinburgh is available on Amazon for your Kindle. On March 10th, it'll be on paperback worldwide. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Once again, thank you very much, Mark Wilson. Nerd up. All right, it's time for another Nerd Up podcast. Loot Crate unboxing. Isaac is ready to unbox his latest Loot Crate. If you want to watch the video, you'll notice a link to Isaac's videos on the right-hand side of the page. Just follow the links and click on one of them. You can see all the history of links and all the other Loot Crate unboxings as well. But the latest one will always be up. But he does a lot of gaming videos, too, about how to play games and let's play games. So a lot of live play with his commentary on video games. But for right now, it's the Loot Crate unboxing for the Nerd Up podcast. Once again, the website, nerduppodcast.blogspot.com. And here we go with the video. You ready to go?
Yeah.
All right, here's the Loot Crate. There's the box. There's Isaac. There's the box. Open it. All right, what do we got inside?
Da, 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 da.
Now, wait a minute. What is the theme this time around?
I have no clue. Warriors, yeah. Warriors.
I have no clue. Warriors. That's a weird theme for a Loot Crate.
Warriors.
Warriors? Oh, is it like, Warriors, come out and play? Oh, my gosh, looks very...
Hey, that's Lion Venom said to taunt Spider-Man in Spider-Man 2000.
But it's also from the movie The Warriors. What'd you get there?
I have no clue. A shirt. I mean, I know that.
What kind of shirt?
I'm going to read about this while you zoom in.
All right, zooming in now, and it is some kind of Warriors is the theme. Oh, I see Mario and Luigi riding dinosaur Yoshis. I also
Alpha
see...
Battle t-shirt.
Oh, wait. Oh, okay, so L and S. What's the S by Luigi Mario for? That's weird. And Y for Yoshi, I can see that. W. All right, I can see that there are different letters and different gaming... What's
S
Q?
For Super Mario?
Super Mario, I see. Okay. Why didn't just M for Mario?
Where's Q?
I see D for Donkey Kong and H for Halo. M for Mega Man or M&M.
Where's Q?
It's right there on the shirt, right in the middle. And R for Rabbids. Hold on, I have to get closer now with this video because this looks pretty darn cool.
F for Frogger.
And a T for Tetris. F for Frogger, I can see that. J for Joust. Oh, I loved that game.
I'm a year old.
I'm not C for something or another.
What?
P for Pitfall. Oh my gosh. X for Professor Xavier.
B for Bomberman.
Oh, B for Bomberman? I don't see the Bomberman. Oh, I see him now.
Wait, where's C?
C has got the guy with the... kind of looks like Rambo. So.
That's Q.
All right, no. This looks like Rambo here. That doesn't look like Rambo. All right, so that's what we got. That's that t-shirt.
Oh, C, Contra.
Contra. Okay, so that's what we got there. All right, now let's get rid of the rest of the box. What else you got there? What is that?
I have no clue. Looks like a collectible thing. Zoom in on that.
Collectible thing?
Very zoom in.
That's pretty technical. Hey, those are rabbits. What's it say on the front?
Dunny. Sideshow.
Oh, okay. You gonna open it and see which one you got?
Screw it, I'm not using scissors. Who needs scissors?
Or whatever device you're listening to this on. Alright, so it's a dunny. Oh, now it's wrapped in foil, so.
Okay.
You gonna use teeth? I knew it! I knew he was gonna use his teeth.
Teeth are tools. Why do you think they both start with T?
You're a tool. Alright. What do you got going?
I have no clue.
Oh, you done ripped it apart. It was a piece of paper that was wrapped around inside there. They really didn't want you to get in there. Oh, that's kind of weird looking.
It's a swoobat. No, I'm just kidding.
It's a bunt. What? It's got a name?
Just making sure here. Kid Robot, I think. I don't know. That's like the most random
that's
name.
Kid Robot was the other. Dunny is that one. I'm going to look. Cool. It's cool looking, though. It's a bat looking creature. Purple bat.
Kid Robot.
Okay.
TM. Okay. So, I mean, that doesn't even make any sense, but okay.
We'll live with it, but it's cool looking. That's all that matters. All right. What else you got? Hey, what's that?
Bow tie.
Hey, bow ties are cool. What's that? Bravest Warriors? What's Bravest Warriors?
It's like a show written by the same people as Adventure Time.
Oh, okay.
Only it's kind of based more like to a teenager.
Oh, we got they had those in a previous loot crate, didn't they?
Yeah, with the cat bug and Han Solo.
Yeah.
Like, show flashback of that. Okay, we're not.
Oh, we're not good at flashbacks. Bravest Warriors. Okay, and I see Bacon Heart.
Please do not eat the delicious greeting card. Instead, go to the secret URL below to get a free Open Me membership for looters.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not telling you the link because it's very
secret.
Obvious.
It's secret. But, what's the...
Bravest Warriors card, free digital comic.
Oh, cool.
40% sexier, is obviously. It looks like... I love you
more
than
bacon.
Nope, this card's never being given to anyone.
All right. I want to see that bow tie again. Hold that bow tie up. Put it on, actually. Bow ties are cool.
Okay. I don't know that.
Is this going to be take a while? Is this going to be one of those things? Is it going to be an issue? Forget it. Look, he's also wearing a shirt from a previous loot crate. Imagine that. So, he's got... And so you got to see, it's kind of a rainbow with the Bravest Warriors.
Yeah.
Drawings on it. So, okay, cool. All right, so you got a digital comic as well. What is that? Hey, it's a bag. What's it say?
Gas-powered stick.
Okay, must be from Bravest Warriors.
Probably. I've only watched it because I've seen like two episodes on the Nintendo video.
Yeah.
That right there.
The DSi?
Yeah.
Or the 3DS?
I think that might be it.
All right, so that looks like it's it. You got a button, too. Let me zoom in on the button.
Oh, I wanted a cat bug bow tie. What? Oh, yeah. With Catbug in a loot crate box.
Oh.
I know who Catbug is because he's the same person who voices the Muffin in ASDF movie.
Yeah, you said that. Yeah. Oh, and you got a crossword puzzle at the back of that. But they don't always have crossword puzzles.
No, I got it.
And we got a dog barking in the background. So, all right, well, that's the loot crate. Just to recap, you got the gas powered stick backpack. You got a t-shirt from, what was that? A to Z, what? Basically, represent video games from A to Z, each letter being represented. Yeah. Then you got the bow tie, which Isaac is just so fashionably showing off right there, which bow ties are cool. And a bacon Valentine card.
That's never.
But it's never going to be given out because Isaac doesn't love anything more than bacon. Digital comic.
Not a sticker. That's a sticker.
And a sticker, okay. And a button.
Barry edited that out.
And then also, what's this little bobblehead thingy, action figure?
I have no clue, but the head turns.
Oh, well. It will turn heads. And it's some kind of a bat, but a kid robot? I don't know. Anyway, from Dunny. So, that's what we got. All right, so that's it for the Loot Crate unboxing.
There we
go.
That out.
Let's get back to the podcast. So, I guess that does it. We're done. We're going to close out for this time around on the Nerd Up podcast. Once again, I'm Guilty Wilson.
I'm Isaac Wilson.
And, hey, stay nerdy. Nerd Up!
www.gilwilson.com.
If you need quality voice work for your radio commercials, audio for TV commercials, or maybe just for that message on hold for your business, you need to check out
www.gilwilson.com.
GILWILSON.com. www.gilwilson.com. Check it out. It's quirky. It's fun. It's innovative.